This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's May 21st, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, we just got back from another trip. Man, you and I, we're like the Harlem Globetrotters, only for poker.
Absolutely. You know, I'm waiting for us to get invited to Gilligan's Island.
I've always wanted to convert a coconut into like an automatic shuffler.
Or Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo.
Okay, yeah, you don't remember Harlem Globetrotters on Scooby-Doo?
I do remember that. I remember it distinctly. I remember them on Gilligan's Island, too, with the like net made out of, you know, leaves and whatever.
Threw one too many TV references at you. You were with me on the first one, but the second one was too much. All right, that's cool.
You meddling kids. I'd have made that three-pointer if it wasn't for you.
Was that Metal Arc Lemon?
It might have been. Or Curly Neal.
Yeah. The only two Globetrotters I'll ever know. Oh, anyhow, what Chris is talking about is we're always on the road, these, it seems like. And actually getting ready to go to Tunica here in a couple weeks. So
yeah.
We'll stay on the road. And so this weekend, it was Daytona Beach, Florida, a little side trip to Melbourne, and then a little cross-state jaunt on little dirt roads.
That was something else, that drive back, man.
Slightly like, better than dirt roads.
It's like, Scott, it's been 6 hours. Shouldn't we be home by now?
It was like the Blair Witch Project. We just kept going in circles. But of course, we'll share all of our hilariously funny stories later on in our main topic. But something came out of this that I thought would be interesting to discuss at the top of the show. And a couple days ago, I was over at the Tampa Bay Downs proofing our pages for our new magazine online now, AntiUpMagazine.com. And one of the dealers came up to me and said, "Hey, Scott, you got to tell me, is Darvin Moon for real? Is he really the nice guy that he seems like, or is he somebody else?" And I told him, like, dude, he is the real deal.
He's the bomb.
He is just so, so cool with a capital K. And I really enjoyed the time that we got to spend with him this weekend at the Charity Classic. And he really was everything that he sounded like he would be after I read the most awesome article that you wrote about him and 2 issues ago.
Yeah, I really, you know what else surprised me too is you see people on TV all the time and you always think, wow, that's a big dude, you know, he's tall. And I stood next to him and I was like, hey, I'm taller than you, buddy. I couldn't believe it. I thought for sure he was going to like tower over me, but
he
funny
was a little
as
wider
hell.
Than me, though.
Yeah, he was a little wider than me, but he was funny as hell. I mean, he had us just laughing in stitches, man. He was telling us some funny stories about other players and some of the stuff he's gone through, and he's just so down to earth. I mean, he really is the guy, the everyman, you know, the guy that just happened to hit lucky and do well. And he's a good player, too. He made the final table of the VIP tournament. So
I was going to say, I mean, if folks are dogging his play, which I don't think anybody that's won $5 million you can ever dog their play. But, yeah, he made the final table of the VIP event the night before. And then, you know, I don't think he cashed in the – actually, I know he didn't cash in the Sunday event, but he certainly was the last – pro celebrity, whatever you want to call him, remaining.
Yeah. Yeah.
He went pretty far in a 560 play field the next day. So the guy's got game.
He's definitely got game, and he knows like Omaha too. And he said he actually played in a stud tournament once and won it, even though he didn't know what he was doing. So he's actually got natural ability too. And that's what he said. He admitted it. He said, "I didn't know what I was doing, but I won it." And so he clearly has natural ability, and he knows people, and you know, he's just down to earth, man. I had a lot of fun with him. He was great.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, part of what a lot of people came up to see him, obviously, and we had other pros at this thing, and you know, anywhere you go where there's pros, you know, people are smitten with him. I think.
Yeah.
You know, you see him on TV, you kind of idolize him. You want to meet him, and you know, we had a couple discussions over the last couple months about you know, how hard this must be to be a pro when you are always in demand.
Yeah.
You can't walk anywhere without someone coming up to you asking for an autograph or to snap a photo or tell you a bad B story or something like that. And it's probably got a grind on you after a while, right?
I would think so. And you know, there's a difference between coming to something where you're expected to be, you know, ingratiating and talking to all these people. And then there's, you know, your everyday life. That's why whenever even when we're going to these things or whatever, and we see people that are famous or whatever, and we have to talk to them for the show or something, I would never talk to them when they're with their family or when they're eating dinner or something like that, because that's their time. But if they're at the poker table or whatever and I need to interview them on a break or something, that's something else. And some people just don't see that distinction. They just say, "Oh my God, there's a famous poker player. I'm going over there and talking to him because it's my only chance, and I don't care if he's having dinner and feeding his baby a bottle, and I don't care." You know, and that's not right. And that's when it can get annoying. So I think it could be difficult for them to have to deal with that, because you know, you have to separate, all right, I'm at a charity tournament versus I'm trying to make a living today in a poker tournament, you know, get off my back. And it's got to be demanding, and it's got to be difficult, because you don't want to come off as a jerk either. You know, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, and that kind of leads into, I guess, my second point is that you know, I think in a lot of ways it's tough for some of these pros that are out and about often to not come off, I wouldn't say as a jerk, but to not live up to the expectations that I think the fans have of them,
right?
Because of other demands on their time and how annoying it might get that the people are always, you know, again, you know, as a fan, you want that person to be how you want them to be, which is why I think this dealer came up to me and said, you know, I want Darvin Moon to be the way I think he is. And he was happy to hear that he was. Now, obviously, you know, Darvin is, you know, less than a year into his notoriety here, and you know, if he keeps playing well, I mean, maybe things will change eventually. Let's hope he stays the everyman forever. But
you know, and the same thing with actors too. You know, you watch Friends or something, and you like the way Joey is, and you hope that Matt LeBlanc is the same way when you meet him, and then he's Matt LeBlanc, and you're like, WTF? You know, why aren't you, you know, dumb and gullible? Why are you this, you know, annoying actor or whatever? So, you know, and it's hard to live up to that, you know? And that's the other thing, too. Like, for, like, say, Phil Hellmuth, for instance, you know, he's the poker brat at the table, and then away from it, he's not. And it's like, what are you looking for when you go meet him? Are you looking for him to call you an idiot, or are you looking for him to be the nice guy you hear about all the time? And it's a lot of pressure, I think, on some of these players. I mean, he obviously relishes it, but the other players, and I think that's the publisher's column we wrote, too, this last month for him, was how, you know, he gets thrown into the Darvin Moon, gets thrown into this spotlight. And, you know, how do you deal with that? You're not equipped to deal with that. You're a logger who just happened to get lucky, you know, in a local satellite, and then you played well in the main event, and now you have all these responsibilities thrust upon you. It must be tough, man. I don't know if I'd want that. I mean, I guess I'd take the $5 million and try it, but it's tough. It's tough to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the third part of this, too, is, you know, we spent a lot of time working with the organizers of this tournament, and it turned out phenomenally. Again, we'll talk more about that later. But they were really keen on getting pros here at the event because they thought that would draw people in. And you know, we get that a lot. You know, people, you know, think, you know, you get a pro, people are going to come running and screaming. You know, we had TJ on our cruise, and it was great to hang out with him. I don't know whether it brought a lot more people on. You know, they were asking, you know, what pros should we get? And my advice to them was, you know, hey, you got Darvin. That is a good get.
Yeah.
That is a guy that I think is going to come and is really going to be good for the event. You know, we went up to Chicago in December, hung out with Bernard Lee and Dennis Phillips. Those two guys are the same way, I think.
Yeah.
And that's not to say other pros that are bigger names aren't that way, but again, because of the demands on their time, it's tough for them to be as gracious as maybe some of these newer quote unquote pros that are still enjoying kind of the honeymoon period of being famous.
Yeah, and that's the other thing too, is if you're planning on being a pro, or you're trying to be a pro, be prepared for this kind of thing, because you know it's going to happen. If you happen to have a big run or a big score or a big year, and people are going to want to talk to you and meet you, and you know it could mean more money for you if you're the type of person that is open to diplomatic, open to speaking to people and talking to them. It could only bode well for you. So it's tough. You and I are sort of pseudo celebrities. We have people that know us that we don't know them, you know what I mean? And right, it's weird, right? People walking up to you and saying, "Hey, are you Chris?" And it's like, "Holy cow, yeah, I'm Chris. Who are you?" You know? and then you find out, "Oh, you listen to the show. That's cool." You know, just it's a weird feeling. It really is. It's a weird feeling.
Yeah, and it kind of makes me, when I think about this stuff, it makes me kind of think about, whether when we meet fans of the show or stuff like that, whether we're coming off as who they expect us to be. Knowing that that's impossible, but at least hoping that I walk away from those encounters with them not thinking that I'm a jerk, or at least more of a jerk than you.
Well, see, that's the thing, is that they
probably settle with that.
They expect me to whine, and when I meet them, they expect me to tell them a bad beat story and complain and and be a jerk, so it's not too hard to do for me.
But anyhow, once again, Darvin Moon, if you guys get the chance to see him, if he's in any events, he's a guy worth driving or flying to see and shake his hand. I definitely was very, 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 felt very blessed to have the time that we did with him this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, we've had a couple good shows lately, Chris. Only a couple.
Only
a
couple.
Finally hitting our stride after almost 5 years.
300 shows in. We're hitting a couple of good ones here and there.
And we continue to get a lot of good feedback, and we got two things today from two of our longtime listeners and frequent contributors. And the first one comes from AZ Slick out there in the Southwest.
Yes.
Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, somewhere out there. Somewhere out there by Area 51. It's all the same area, right? He said he was driving there today and he heard a country western song. I love when they play my two favorite kinds of music, country and western.
All in one nice, all neat
one
package.
Yep. They're able to combine them, It's tough to do, but they're able to get them all into one song. But he was listening to a country western song, and he said it reminded him of us, Chris.
Wow. Country and western, me and you? I would never put us in the same sentence.
I'm definitely western. You can be country.
Oh, man. No way.
All right, so he says, imagine two lines in the chorus to put you two together. The song is, quote, working beer on the beer, working beer on the table.
Working, what does that mean?
I have no idea. Working beer on the table. Didn't say who it was by, but I guess you can Google it and figure it out. Go to iTunes and download it. Maybe we'll get a commission.
Yeah.
Working beer on the table is the name of the song. And he says, the line that reminds him of me, Chris, is, working hard all week to put beer on the table. So maybe the song's working to put beer on the table. That would make more sense.
Yeah, it's probably right.
But it's working beer on the table, according to Slick. Working all day to put beer on the table. I kind of like that.
Yeah, that's that does sound like you, actually.
It does kind of sum me up a little bit, doesn't it?
It does.
Sound. But it does. In country western terms, that's how you sum it up. All right, he says, the line that reminds him of you, Chris, that poker makes me broker every Saturday night.
Oh, zing.
That poker makes me broker. I love that already.
Yeah.
And then the fact that he attaches that to you.
Yep.
Apparently you're not running very well in AZ Slick's eyes, Chris.
No, and I'm not running slick. I'm not running well in anyone's eyes, to be honest with you. So he hit it right on the head there, buddy. Doesn't have to be Saturday night, though. It could be any night. Poker
yes,
make me
true.
Broker
yeah,
every night is what I should say.
We'll have to fact check that, yeah. Poker makes me broker every single time I play. Doesn't have the same ring, though, in the country western.
Signing over my house.
All right, we also got a couple calls from Gundam. He's got that hotline number on speed dial. He's not afraid to call.
You know, it's funny. He's got a cell phone, and it's got one button on it, and it says hotline. That's all he uses the phone for. It just, he hits that one button, and it calls us, because this guy calls us like every other day.
All right, well, he sent us two clips. We're only going to play one, but we'll talk about the second one. But the first one was on this very interesting discussion we had about the Beau Rivage rule, about players being required to point out mistakes.
Hey, this is Gundam Poker. I just wanted to make a comment about your guys' discussion on rule number 12 at the poker room, where any player is obligated to point out the winning pot. I think, you didn't mention it, but I think another good reason for that rule is it kind of protects the players that decide to do it. You might be at a table where, you know, that rule isn't explicitly said, and a player happens to point out the winning pot, and everybody gives him heat, or at least the person who ends up losing the pot really gets after him, gets irate. Well, by having the rule explicitly written, it kind of protects the players that do happen to point it out, where they can point to the rules and say, hey, I'm just following the rules, instead of seeming like they're trying to get personal and screw somebody out of a pot.
See, now this is exactly what I was thinking last time we talked about it, but just didn't actually say it.
So we just put it out there. We're like clay.
Yeah.
And the listeners mold us.
You know, and I was thinking, like, you know, a lot of times at the table, I'm folding so many hands that I'm like table captain. I'm watching what's going on and everything, and I end up like saying stuff. And so it's exactly it. I don't want to get my ass beat in the parking lot by some hairy guy with, you know, big knuckles. So, you know, it's like, hey, man, I'm just following the rules. The guy said that, you know, if you didn't win the pot, you shouldn't win the pot. So I'm just pointing that out. Don't beat me up, you know. And that's what I'm thinking, too. I'm thinking security.
I've got diplomatic immunity. I'm invoking Rule 12. you know, I get it. I just, you know, I still think it's uncomfortable to, or it potentially could be uncomfortable to point out these mistakes, regardless of whether there's something written on a wall on the other side of the room.
Yeah.
But you know, I think the room is probably better for it if people will get used to it and know it. Now, again, I don't know how many. I didn't do a little survey at Beau Rivage. I'm guessing you didn't either. How many people knew what Rule 12 was?
Oh, yeah. I walked around and asked every player after I had my one outer.
Particularly the way we see people play in most poker rooms, we know they haven't read a poker rule anywhere, let alone in that room.
Oh, there are poker rules here? Where are they?
You mean I can't tell my buddy what my cards were in the middle of the hand? Point out the possible flush and giggle about it? That's a rule?
Oh, my God.
All right, then he sent us another clip that, like I said, we're not going to play. But Chris, he had a little fun with you. He thought you've had these just obscenely terrible hands on the show the last couple weeks. You know, the Cruz and then Bo, just total brutal, cold as cold gets hands, right? And Gundam just said, you know, hey, I don't ever want to hear Chris whine about online poker being rigged anymore. Because, you know, live poker is just as rigged if you're going to use the same qualification.
You know, I have to, you know, defend myself here. I don't remember. I want somebody to show me the last time I complained about an online bad beat on the show. You know what I mean? People are just hanging on to that one time I wanted to quit poker.
Yeah.
They won't let it go. But believe me, more live bad beats will be told before this show is over today. So,
all right. Let me ask you this, Chris. has there been anything that you've told your wife that she has forgotten? You've been married how many years now?
About 15.
Yes, yes, yes. So you have to – you should know more than a lot of people. And when you say something
– Yeah, I know.
There's no going back from it.
Yeah,
can't change your mind. It's out there. And every time you leave the laundry basket in the hallway, she's going to bring it back up. And every time you complain about a hand at the bow, somebody's going to bring it up.
Well, you know, it's true, though. It's true. I know that the bad beats happen. I saw a ton of unbelievable suckouts during the tournaments and even the cash games I've been playing lately. Not just to me, other people. I haven't seen a one-outer like mine lately, but yeah, some pretty incredible events. Actually, I did see a one-outer in the tournament that we just played at Daytona. Somebody had, Yeah, somebody made quads, I think, over... yeah, that's what it was. It was quads over a set like mine. So, pretty brutal stuff, man. The game is brutal. It's a brutal game. Poker itself is the devil's game.
Yep. And that stuff happens online or live.
Yep.
Knows it more online. And I don't want to reopen this discussion too much, but I was thinking about it this morning, too. And I think one of the points I don't think we've made before is that you have expectations, preconceived expectations on anything.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yeah.
You walk into a bar, you look across the bar, you see the pretty girl, she turns around, she happens to have a nose ring.
What the hell?
You're going to have, without even talking to her, you're going to have an idea in your mind of what that means.
Right.
Positive or negative.
Right.
Depending on who you are and what you think of it.
Right.
And it's the same thing with online poker. I think there's just so much noise out there on the forums and buddies talking and everybody like, you know, hey, online poker's rigged, that when people start playing online, or even if they're online, they've got a preconceived notion that it's rigged, and you look for reasons to prove it.
Right.
You know? And if you're looking for things, you're always going to find it, unless, of course, you're car keys. But you're always going to find it, and particularly something that can't be proven. So, see, there's an example. Online poker's rigged, just like everybody's saying. And no one's saying live poker's rigged. You know, if everybody started, or somebody said, hey, this home game is crooked, I guarantee you, you're going to sit down and you're going to go, hey.
You better cut that dick.
You see that guy in the AC? See what he just did? So, you know, it's all preconceived notions. So if you're able to get away from that, and I admit I am not able to get away from that as much as I try, and I suspect most people are the same way, that's what's going to happen. Your filters are going to be clogged.
All right, so again, how did we get on this from Gundam making fun of me in a clip that we didn't even freaking play? Thank you very much. Well, speaking of online poker, our next Apes event is May 29th at noon, and it's going to be Raz.
Totally fixed. Totally rigged.
It's totally rigged that we're playing Raz on May 29th. For some reason, I don't know what that means. But it's the game of the Antiep Nation. This is a very important banana. We'll have a free roll for it, too, on Saturday. It's this Saturday, right?
Yeah, this Saturday.
Yep.
So hopefully you're listening on time. If not, you missed it. Too bad.
It'll be noon Eastern time. And you know all the details. If you're an interloper, I'm going to say something in Spanish, and you're not going to know what it means. So, if you need to know anything, go to antiupmagazine.com/apes, and you can find all the details for our schedule, our passwords, everything. And also, our hand of the week today is a Raz hand, right?
It's a doozy of one, Chris. You're going to love this one.
That's cool.
It's from a he's not swag eligible, but we're going to give him swag because it's such a good hand. But, you know, we got Raz coming up, and I figured, you know, hey, this is the – I'm going to go on the ledge and say this is the quintessential Raz training hand that we'll have at the end of the show.
Very cool.
So, you know, hey, if the baby's crying, you know, let the husband go get it. Because you're not going to want to miss the end of the show. Because you know you can't pause our show.
All right, let's see what's brewing on the Ante Up News Desk.
The Ways and Means Committee of the U.S. House of Representatives held a hearing on Wednesday to discuss the pros and cons of regulating online gaming. Representative Jim McDermott, the author of one of two bills in the House in favor of regulation, said regulating the industry could mean $42 billion for the federal government over the next 10 years. Well, Representative Bob Goodlatte, an opponent, said doing so would increase gambling addiction and divorce rates.
I actually did a lot of research on this news item today.
Really?
And yeah, I did a lot of reading, and one person put it succinctly. He said it's something like, you know, when you're it's sort of like in poker when you have the nuts and somebody's betting into you and you just let them, you know, you're leading the dog the whole way. It was sort of like when Bob Goodlatte, as I'll call him, likes
Latte.
when he gets up in front of the house and everybody or whatever, and the people are like, hey, you said you're completely opposed to gambling, right? And he's like, yeah. Like, even bingo? Yeah. Even bingo in church, you're against that, right, Bob? And you can see him just, like, shrinking in his chair. And then they said to him, isn't it true that you got $40,000 from the National Thoroughbred Racing Association to secure horse racing? And then he had, like, nothing to say. And it's like, there you go. And then all Jim McDermott had to do was stand up and say, hey, you know, we're going to have $42 billion over 10 years. And, oh, by the way, if your state of Virginia doesn't want any of the money, that's okay. You don't have to take any of it. We'll take it all ourselves, and you guys can take the high and mighty road. I mean, it was classic. It's classic. I'm really glad to see that this stuff is really starting to come to the forefront and coming to a head, and I really think we're going to win this thing. I really do.
Yeah, let's hope so, because the next time in the news desk, we have an impending deadline here.
Well, with a June 1st enforcement deadline looming for the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act, the Poker Players Alliance has asked the U.S. Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve to clarify the provisions of the act and what it will mean for online poker. I think they even essentially are asking to have it exempt from it, right? And that's what they're
doing. I think they've been obviously pushing for another delay, but it sounds like that's unlikely. They're looking to try to now kind of get a carve out for poker at the last minute, you know, because it's a skill game. So hopefully that will happen. And if not, I think, you know, they're just, you know, you keep asking. You'll find something that you can latch on to kind of make it a little easier for poker players. But hopefully we'll be able to ask John Pappas, executive director of the PPA, that next week. He is tentatively scheduled to be a guest on the show to let us know what all this means with June 1 bearing down on us. So
very cool.
If you have any questions for John, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com, or we'll start a thread on our forum at annieupmagazine.com/forum. All right, finally, Chris, Elena Kagan, President Barack Obama's nominee for the Supreme Court, apparently is something of a poker player, according to two TV reporters. CBS and NBC have both reported that Kagan has been known to enjoy the Great American Card Game, Chris.
I did read that, and people are ecstatic about it. I don't know if it'll actually get that far that we'll need to have her in our corner, but if it does, it's nice to know there's somebody there that could say to him, you know, look, you guys don't understand what you're talking about. You know, you don't draw out a gut shot. You know what I mean? You know, so it'll be good to have her there if we need her, if she gets there.
I'm tired of John Roberts winning the annual Supreme Court sit and go, you know, 3 years in a row. Need some fresh blood up there.
Oh, man. Okay, well, we have a hotline all the way from L.A. today. Phone number is 813-448-1120. You know the deal. You call, we use, Scott gives. This comes from Brian, and it's about DeepStacks.
I just wanted to call in and say thanks for the introduction to DeepStacks. I just attended their camp at the Live Camp of Commerce, and Chris Trinaprana, a great camp, and all the instructors were really great. My bankroll is very thankful. Anyway, I had a funny thing happen during sign-in. At the sign-in table, I was standing there, and the woman asked me, she says, what level of play are you? And just at that time, Mike Massa walked up and said, he's an idiot. Anyway, I thought it kind of reminded me of Chris's story of being called an idiot in the hallway. Anyway, thanks for the podcast. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you soon.
Wow, look at that. An unsolicited testimonial.
We didn't even ask.
No.
That's what unsolicited means. Oh, but he also talked about you know, Mattisell calling him an idiot and stuff. That's what you go for. You know, that's what makes you happy. You know, you expect him to call you an idiot when you see him, and if he doesn't, you're let down. And he called him an idiot, so that's cool.
You get the full experience there. That's what you're looking for. All right, Brian, we appreciate the call, and we will be sending you a $10 staking package from getastake.com. Email us your address at podcast@magazine.com. We'll get that wonderful swag out to you. And everyone else, that number is 813-448-1120, or just steal Gundam's cell phone.
Hey, I want you to read the mailbag, buddy.
Yeah, okay. All right, here we go. It comes from a guy named Average Joe. I'm guessing, Chris, that's not his given name.
No, and it's all word with a capital J in the middle, so it could be his given name, because that's the new way the kids name themselves.
That's true. But can you imagine the mom that the kid pops out, and they're handed it in swaddling clothes and a blanket and stuff, and she's like, oh, my God, he looks so average.
Average Joe.
All right, well, Average Joe, here you go. First of all, Chrissy says, props to you.
To you.
To you. Love the podcast. Wish it was daily, not weekly. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
We entertained that thought once before, but since our wives haven't seen us in 4 months, I don't think that's going to happen. He says, okay, here's my dilemma. I'm playing in a home game, and the question is a card laid a card played? I kind of like the little rhyme there.
Yeah.
Or do you make it right? He says, the story goes like this. I had ace of diamonds, jack of diamonds, and small blind. I had just 7 big blinds left, 2 limpers, and he pushes all in, Chris.
Okay.
Big blind calls instantly. The other 2 fold. And the last guy showing ace of jack. Oh, thanks. That's great. 2 of your outs are gone.
Yeah.
Big blind turns over 9-9. 9 of hearts, 9 of spades. Flop comes 9 of diamonds, 10 of hearts, 4 of diamonds. Turn is the queen of spades. Table starts talking about all his outs. Dealer turns and says, did I burn a card? Says someone not in the hand says yes, and the dealer turns the king of clubs. Of course, a happy dance there for Average Joe. But hold on a minute, Chris. Pocket nines guy says, hey, he did not burn a card. So they count through the cards on the table, find out he's right, and they deal out a new card. It's the 5 of clubs. And Average Joe is less than average now.
Below Average Joe.
Yes, below Average Joe now. He says, LOL, I seem to find new ways to lose. He laughed, thought it did it right, but after talking, some said, a card laid is a card played. So he wants to know, Chris, did they do it right?
They did it right. I don't know what they did with the cards that were exposed or whatever, if they made them the burn cards like they were supposed to. And then just turned, or if they just turned again, then that would have been wrong.
Right,
but
right.
Apparently, now it was the queen that was the card that wasn't, you know, that's what I'm saying. Is it turn or was it the river that's talking
I believe
about?
I believe it was the king is probably what they...
Okay. If it's the king, then the king should have been the burn, and then the 5 should have been the card, if that was the next card. But if they took the 5 and, you know what I mean? So it had to be that the king was supposed to be your burn and the 5 was the right card. That's the way to do it. A card laid is not a card played, you know. I mean, a card laid maybe got lucky, but can't be played. You see it every day almost in the poker room when they call a floor over and they say, you know what, you know, this card was shown and it wasn't supposed to be. It gets put back in the deck, they shuffle it, you know, and then they do it again. So same thing here. If that was the burn, it was supposed to be the burn, you have to, that's the way it is. It's like destiny, you know, they say you have to play the cards the way they are. That's why, like, when you're dealing and they flip a card over by accident, they keep dealing to the people the rest of the cards that were going to be their cards because it's destiny. That's what the deck is set for. So they did it right. They were supposed to get rid of that king and burn as the burn and turn the next card. So sorry, buddy. That is what they should have done.
Yeah, he seems to be in agreement even though he's lost his stack there. But he did a follow-up question, too, and wanted to know a good resource for using stuff like this in their home game. And certainly the Tournament Directors Association is probably the best resource to have because most rooms use those rules, TDA rules.
Yeah, and I always use
that website.
Always use that book, too, by Kelly Mix, The Official Rules of Poker, which are basically Robert's Rules of Poker. Everybody always cites Robert's Rules of Poker, even the most of the you know, card room managers that we talk to and deal with every day. So Robert's Rules of Poker, Official Rules of Poker, Kelly Mix's book, and TDA is you can't go wrong with those. And they're all pretty much in agreement with each other. So if anything, they all came from each other. So that's the way to go.
Now, I probably should have looked this up, but I'm curious as to whether there'd be a difference if there was action pending after that king came out, which is usually the first question the floors ask when they come over when they're called, you know, where's the action? What's if there's action, they got to play it out. In this case, both players were all in, so there's no extra action there.
Yeah, I think that if there is action, they actually have to let it stand then.
Yep.
But there is no action before that king, so I'm pretty sure. I think I even read that on the show once through one of those rules, that if action has been, then action is kept. So I don't know. I didn't look it up either. I probably should have, but I didn't know you were going to ask that question, so I couldn't.
Put you on the spot, and I want to prove that you and I know nothing other than how to push record. All right, well, we appreciate the email, Average Joe, and we will be send us your address. We'll be happy to send you an uncut sheet of J-Design cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com. They are the official playing cards of Anti-Up. And remember, these uncut sheets will be the swag offering from J Design for the months of May and June. And if you want to get a look at what these bad boys look like, check out our forum at AntiUpMagazine.com/forum, where Jay Herkey just got his sheet back from the framer. He actually went and got them framed.
Yeah, that was sweet.
Put them on the wall, and they're pretty sweet photos, and he posted them there so everybody could see. So check those out, and then remember to email so you have a chance to win them yourself.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery. The Case of the Jackhammers. It's early in a 100-person field of a very tough MTT.
What a way to start the day.
We've played only two hands to this point. In the first hand, I flopped a flush draw and picked up a gut shot on the turn with an over and decided to lead out, thinking that on a dangerous board that would give me an option of bluffing the river. My opponent read me well, came over the top, and shut down the hand, and I was forced to let it go. Hand two, I raise with jack-jack, the flop is queen high, and I call three small but consecutive bets to see a queen 10.
Best to avoid the fireworks, sir.
This third hand, I get jack-jack again, I raise again, and I get a caller. But this time the flop is 10 high, 10-7-3 rainbow. I bet the pot in order to protect my hand, and quite frankly I need the chips, and I get check-raised. I have 1,000 chips left, which is one-third of my starting stack size, and although the blinds are still low, this seems quite a pickle.
Just one more thing.
Before you answer, think about this. This tournament only pays the top two places. So, you gonna let this go?
Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Chris, always fun when we are on the road together.
Fun is a relative term.
Because if we had been, people had filmed our road trips before The Odd Couple made it on TV or on stage, it never would have been there. It would have always been us.
We are the odd couple, man.
We make traveling interesting, I believe. You know, from you jacking that AC down to turning it into a...
igloo.
Yeah, where, you know, I thought there was going to be, like, you know, a cow in there, and Rocky was going to come in and do some slugging there. Polly was going to let the door, hey, go on in, Rock! It's nice and cold in here. Yeah, I can't believe my chattering teeth didn't keep you awake.
No, your snoring did. It wasn't the chattering teeth. Don't worry.
But no, we had a great trip. It was all inspired by getting over to the wonderful Deep Stack Charity Classic, a great event that was held at Daytona Beach Kennel Club for the second year. Last year was a phenomenal success, and it's hard to call last year a phenomenal success after this year. When they had so many more people. And then we used the trip to kind of take a little side trip on the way home and check out a new possible ship for the Anti-Up Poker Cruise 3. We say Trey.
The Trilogy.
Yeah, we didn't call the last one Deuce. We probably should have.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, we're going to call this one Trey.
Anti-Up Poker Cruise Trey.
No, I'm just going to call it Trey.
Just call it Trey. Okay, when we advertise in the magazine, I'm just going to put a big 3 on the page.
Yeah, yeah, you know, those 47 straight weeks that we bore people with, hey,
don't
cabin's still left. it's not going to be Anti-Up Poker Cruise. I'm just going to say, cabin's left for Trey.
It'll be more entertaining that way.
Well, yeah, it was a great trip, and we should probably start off talking about this great Deep Stack Classic event. And we got in there early, Chris.
Yep.
The night before, they had a special VIP event where they put a couple pros there. They had, obviously, Darvin Moon that we talked about. Mike Matusow was there. World champ Tom McAvoy was also in the field. And they couldn't hold a candle to Keith Anti-Up King Garcia, an unbilled pro in the field. He's been actually a great listener for our show, and fortunately won his way in our drawing at AntiUpMagazine.com/contest. And he won a seat in this $440 event, Chris.
Yes, yes. People really do win on AntiUp. That's all I got to say.
By far the best gift we've ever given away in Annie Up, and I was very happy to see that Keith won it because I knew he would enjoy it, and he did pretty good too. He didn't make any money. In fact, actually, he lost money because he ended up buying his dinner at Wing House.
but he did say at dinner though that it was the highlight of his poker career.
That is very true, and it was very, very nice to hear it. And he also he got everybody's autograph, which is great. You know, he's kind of soaked it up like a fantasy camp. Perfect.
Yeah, I love the white hat he had to buy at Walmart for $1.99 or whatever it was. That was hilarious. He's like, I got to get a white hat so they can sign it.
It's white right now. He's just waiting for an Antiup patch to go right in the middle of it. So as soon as we get those bad boys in, it won't be so much white anymore. But Keith, it was great meeting you, you know, again, and glad you had a good time in the tournament. And then of course, we got some good sleep and showed up the next day for what was just probably the largest single day in one room tournament with nothing else going on that I've ever seen. You go out the World Series and it's like, you know, 4,000 people across 90 rooms. But it was like a 50-table room, and they were able to cram in 560 people in this thing, Chris.
Yeah, about 50 of them were rebuys, and we were sitting 11-handed at the big tables. It was pretty crowded, but it was like a party atmosphere. It was pretty amazing. Very loud, lots of giveaways, and a lot of rebuys made a pretty big prize pool.
Yeah, yeah. And again, more than $70,000 in donated prizes and support for the good folks that put this on. Included in that was Outback catered the dinner for everybody. 560 players plus dealers and support staff. So well more than 600. And when I heard Outback's doing the dinner for 600, I was expecting, you know, some, you know, sliders.
Yeah.
Bite-sized hamburgers or something, you know, something that gives you the kind of the Outback taste. But no, it was steak and chicken and salad and potatoes.
And salmon. So salmon.
Yeah, and salmon, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Cheesecake. So it was pretty wild.
You can imagine the money Outback draft to make this too. But 70,000 donate prizes. Haven't heard yet. I heard from one of the organizers. He called me on Tuesday just to thank Annie up again for all the help we gave them. But still a little bleary-eyed. I don't think they have finished counting all the money, but rest assured, if you were one of the 560 people that showed up there, that you helped make a wonderful, wonderful day for a lot of good charities in the Daytona Beach area.
Well, let's get to the tournament, too, because we both got to play in it. And, you know, you, of course, every time you and I are in a charity tournament together, you sit next to, like, the marquee pro. Let's all the way back to Vinny LeCavalier's event. Dan DeGran, who's at your table. I've got, like, Channel 9 news anchor. You know, I just don't get it. And then,
Skip
you know,
Gruberson.
It's ridiculous. Now, this time, you draw Tom McAvoy on your left.
Yeah, on my left, not my right. I was not happy about that. But I took my seat and I was getting ready to play, and then I saw Tom coming over, and the director pointed him, like, hey, you're in seat 11 right there. And I'm like, I looked over, I'm like, gosh, dagnit, he's in the left. I'm like, oh, that's great. I'm going to sit. Not only am I going to get to play against a world champion, I'm going to sit right next to him, have some good conversation with him. I'd much prefer it had he been on the right than the left, but, you know, whatever. I'll try to last as long as I can against this.
Yeah.
And also, Rich Belsky, Mike Maniso's agent, was at our table, too, which is kind of funny. He's on the other side, though, so we didn't get a chance to talk to him. But I sit down, and I text you, hey, McAvoy on my left! And I cannot print what you texted back. But I'm guessing you were upset at my good fortune.
Every time we go to these things, you have a pro next to you. How am I supposed to be happy about that? You know?
Well, I was absolutely, again, I didn't want him on my left, and I was a little scared. Get this, Chris. I've asked you this before. I just want to be sure the answer is still correct. How many world champions have you felted?
Zero.
Zero?
Yes.
Not one?
No.
How many have I felted now?
One.
One. One. One is more than none.
But you felted him in a rebuy. He got the rebuy.
All right. You're going to get all technical on me. It's all like, you know, cashing when you got a seat. Your free roll.
Hey, if you wouldn't give me that, I'm not giving you this.
But yeah, I had a great hand that Tom was talking about the rest of the day there. He would not let it go, which was hilarious. Not only did I, you know, get all of his chips, but I got him rattled enough that he couldn't quit complaining about my play. So
you didn't tell me that part. I thought it was a brilliant play on your mind, and you didn't tell me that he complained.
In my mind, it was. Tom wasn't very happy about it. It's a deep stack tournament. We started with 10,000 in chips. It was like in the first couple levels, and I limped in with 10-9 because there were a couple limpers in front of me. And not suited either because, like, when people were asking me about it later, they go, how to be suited? I'm like, no, it wasn't suited. Geez, sorry. Limping, he made it like 4 or 5X to go. All right, I was ready. My cards were almost touching the muck, right? But then, like, four other people called. So I'm like, you know what? It's deep. It's only going to cost me another 400 at this point. I got 10,000 in chips. All this money in there. I'll take a flyer. Maybe I'll hit something, right?
Right.
Call, flop comes, jack, 8-7. So I'm like, wow, I'm open-ended. I'm like, whoa, no, I'm not. I'm there already, baby. But there were two diamonds. So, I mean, here's the dilemma. What do you do?
Yeah.
You don't want to give a free card to the diamond draw with all those people in, right?
Right.
But I figured that Tom was going to lead out, continue his nice little C bet there, so I was willing to take the risk. So I wrapped the table. He complied by moving all in, which is exactly what I wanted to do because that was going to make it too expensive for any flush draws. Of course, it gets around. Everybody folds except one guy. Thinks about it forever and calls. So then I shove all in. Thinks about it more. He calls. That guy turns over king, queen of diamonds.
Oh.
So the fact that he had no odds for the flush draw did not deter him. So I had to fade the diamonds, and then, of course, Tom turned over pocket queens for an overpair. And before I even turned my cards over, he's like, I already know what you have, Scott. Turned over, I faded the diamonds, took down a massive pot, became a chip leader. I actually won a little card protector because of that.
Let me ask you something.
Yes.
The other guy who overcalled with the king, queen.
Yes.
Did he rebuy?
No.
No.
He had us covered, so he didn't need to.
Oh, okay. Did he eventually go bust and rebuy?
No, he actually outlasted me too.
Well, here's the thing. He had a king queen, right? And it came jack. What did it come jack?
Jack 7-8.
7-8. Yeah. So I mean, he had two overs and a flush draw, a rebuy tournament. I thought if you had him covered, then he could have been like, you know, I got to build a lot of chips to rebuy, and if not, I can rebuy. So that's why I thought I wouldn't fault him.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a rough play, though.
Yeah, yeah. But like I said, if it's a rebuy tournament, so if I thought if he was going felt, then he could have rebought. But he had everybody covered, so I'm not sure what he was thinking then.
Nah, he's kind of a recreational player. I don't want to pick on him. I mean, he's not. He's got a little home game there, and they all came out to support the charity. So
yeah.
But so later on, there was another. Kind of a high-stakes Florida player at the table, too, that Tom kind of knew, and they were talking. That guy was an alternate, so he joined the table after this. And Tom was still murmuring about this hand. 10-9. How can you call my raise a 10-9? And the guy's like, dude, that's Florida poker, man.
Oh, that's almost a slap in the face,
guy. It was a total slap in the face. And I just really laughed it off. I mean, I wasn't going to go all Cosenza on him. I'm like, yeah, that's Florida poker, as I stacked my chips yet again. And then it started an interesting discussion about how Tom, who doesn't really like to fly that much, it sounded like, is going to make a couple trips to Florida here when the limits change because he thinks he can snap off players like me. Little does he know that he's not going to see me anywhere near anything where he can snap me off ever again. But it was an interesting discussion about that, and we talked about it before about how pros are going to come feast on Florida players. And one of the funniest quotes was the discussion went about, and the dealer table was like, really? You think that's going to happen? And both of them went, oh, yeah, of course. He's like, the dealer's like, I think there's going to be a lot of upset pros.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, sing it. We're not scared. Send those pros down here. We'll carve them up.
Yeah, I'll cover them up if they play in the 50-cent dollar game that I'm hoping they still spread somewhere.
Yeah, I had the dealers back at the table, but as soon as I left, I'm like, dude, man. Yeah, Tom, you're going to carve us up, buddy. Come on down. but that was the highlight of my tournament. I ended up going out. It lasted a while, but I ended up going out later on. But you, Chris.
Yeah.
you were the true player in that. Anybody can felt a world champion, but
anybody can felt. Well, but yeah, I went deep.
500, almost 520, 500 players, more than 500 players. Yeah. That takes somebody.
Well, you know what, though? I much rather would have gone out earlier and gone to Wing House or something. I don't know. But instead of just playing for almost 10 hours and the blinds were so high that I had to go all in with a flush draw and a wheel draw at the end. And I was seven spots shy of the money. I finished 47th. They paid 40. You know, with all those rebuys and all those extra players, they probably should have paid more spots than that. But I'm marking it down as a cash in my career. If you can say that you felted a world champion, even though he's still at the table, then I can say that I had a cash in a tournament. Because, oh my God, dude! I mean, I was playing that long and to come away with nothing was very difficult. But the one thing about the tournament I wanted to say was I had aces five times. I didn't have kings or anything like that. I didn't have jacks. I didn't have tens. I had queens twice, and they both held up. But I had aces five times, wow. And almost every single outcome that could possibly happen with your hand happened to me with aces, aside from, you know, not burning a card and turning over the king and, you know. But I had – the first time I got them, pocket aces, I raised, got two callers, flopped a set, and it was the case ace. The guy had ace queen. I wow. bet out because I had a feeling he had, like, ace king. He raised all in. I felt in him. I was like, all right, this is good. Now I'm like one of the chip leaders in the tournament because I've got like 30,000 in chips. A couple rounds later, I get him again. I raise. No one calls. I show him. So I raise and take it without any. So that's two ways to play him. The next time I get him, it was like about 2 hours later at another table. I get pocket aces. I raise. I get a guy who calls me in the blinds. It comes all unders. I shove. He calls. He had pocket aces too. We split with pocket aces. Then the next time I get him, I have pocket aces right after pocket queens when I tripled up and was like, I was like third in chips, like in the tournament at that time. I had 150,000 in chips. And next hand I get pocket aces. I get a raise and a re-raise from another guy and then a caller.
Wow.
So I go all in. And another guy who had limped calls my all in for 40,000 when the blinds were 1,500 and 3,000. Wow. He calls my all-in, turns over king, queen, off. I turn over aces. I'm about to have like 180 to 200,000 in chips in front of me, and he rivers a straight.
Oh, wow. So you knew it was coming.
Yeah, I did because everything was happening with aces to me. So really, I mean, everything. I had a win with a raise. I flopped a set and felted somebody. I split when someone else had aces, and I lost with aces. It was really a kind of a weird tournament that way, but it was a great tournament. I liked the structure up until the end. It got a little hairy there, and you know, I was a favorite after the flop against a guy who had ace king and flopped an ace. I actually was a favorite. I did it on our poker calculator on magazine.com.
Excellent.
But yeah, I went out. It was tough. It's a bitter pill to swallow, especially since normally they would pay 60 spots there and more probably because of the revives. So a bitter pill to swallow. But I was happy that I played well considering how bad I've been running at the live game. So it was fun. It was a great time. But there's a lot more to talk about besides our tournament play. A lot of stuff happened.
Yeah, it was crazy. You know, one of the great things about this event, which is why I kept talking it up, is that the organizers were relentless over the last half a year, in attracting donations.
Yeah.
And not just the food and stuff, but also raffles and giveaways. And so they had a great drawing for, I don't know how many it was, you know, 50, 60, 70 things during the tournament just for folks that signed up for the tournament. But then they had a separate thing, Chris, where they got some big money gifts, donations, stuff that was worth, you know, up to $1,500.
Oh, yeah.
And they put a little spread out there, and you could buy tickets separate and enter it, right? And
yeah.
And the way it worked is you got 11 tickets for $20, and then, of course, all the money went to the charity. And I'm a charitable soul, right? So, you know, I gave them the $20, and then you get 11 tickets. And then you could divide your tickets up and put as many as you want in any of the bowls.
Right.
So, you know, you're not just entered 11 for all the prizes with your... You could beef up on one, right?
I think the Anti-Up Nation gets it. You can move on now. Jeez. They understand, Scott. You can move on now. Let's hear the story.
I surveyed the prizes, and a lot of them were really nice, but most of them were stuff that I just would not use. But I noticed there was a nice little 32-inch flat-screen TV there. All right, now, I'm quite happy with the TV here in the Long household. I'm not going to run out and buy a flat-screen just because everybody else in America has one. But, you know, if I was to happen to win one, different story, right? So I got 11 tickets. You know what? I'm going to put 8 in that. I want that bad boy. That bad boy's mine. I'm going to write my name on it. And I put the other 3 in the drawing for Orlando Magic tickets with a little autographed basketball from Vince Carter. So that way, maybe I can win both because I'm greedy like that, right?
Right.
And then so then they do the raffle drawing, and of course I'm tuning out all the other ones because I know I'm not even entered, so I can't win. And then, all right, another TV, so I perk up and get my tickets out, and bingo, bango, bongo, they called my number, buddy.
Hey, it's funny because you're like, when we're standing there in front of the television, you said, I'm going for the TV, man. I'm going for the TV. You're getting all excited. I'm like, he doesn't have a shot. And then on the break, I walked out to see you, and you're there like, pat in the box like it's a dog, you know. Like, look at my little good buddy here, my little new best friend that I just won. I'm like, that's not yours. Yeah, I won it. I couldn't believe it. Sure enough, at the break, I give you my key, you put it in the car. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. God, it's not enough that you had McAvoy on your left. Now you spend $20 and win a freaking HD flat screen. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah,
you're like Kramer. You fall ass backwards in the money. You know, it's ridiculous. I play for 10.5 hours and get nothing. You play for 5 minutes, felt the world champion, and get a freaking flat screen TV.
Yeah, the world works in mysterious ways, my friend.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know where that TV is right now?
Yeah, where is it?
It's still in the box in the living room.
I told you I'd give you $100, take it off your hands. I don't know why you won't take me up on the offer. You're not going to use the TV.
Oh, I'll use it. I just got to figure out the best possible way to use it.
You're going to teach it to fetch?
maybe. Well, we also, of course, when we go to events like this, it's always nice to see folks that come up and say, hey, you're Scott and Chris, and we had a bunch of those. A couple of guys that were on our cruise were there, that was good. Some readers, too, was great. And they were at breakfast because, you know, they catered breakfast, too, and on top of Outback, they had these great bagels and stuff.
Yeah.
We had a guy like, hey, you guys are the guys with the magazine, right? And we're like, yeah. And he's like, oh, okay. I don't want to bother you when you're eating, but can I get a picture of you when you're done?
And I'm like, can't we go anywhere? I just want to be myself. I just want to have a little privacy with my partner and work and have a little bagel to myself. But I, of course, yes, I'll stop what I'm doing to have a photo taken with you. And, of course, I'm kidding. He was actually a guy that I had met once before at Sarasota. Great guy. And he cashed in the main event. He won $300 and he had a real dilemma on his hand, but got through it and cashed. So I was happy for him. Took our photo and had a good time with him.
Yeah, I felt good for him, too, because I talked to him a little bit after the photo, too, and, you know, I had a real kind of heart-wrenching story about how he got into poker as one of his relatives, is the one that got him into it, and then died unexpectedly, and now he's been playing for that guy ever since, and was just feeling it that day.
And the cool thing, too, the reason why he was feeling it was he was at table 33, and that was like the person who taught him his favorite hand, pocket threes. So he took it as a sign and went the whole way with it and cashed. And when I saw him afterward, he was kind of like sad that he really wanted to take it down for him. And I'm like, hey, you know what, though? You cashed in the tournament that started with 33. That's a pretty big feat, you know? And he's like, yeah, yeah. So he actually felt pretty good about it after he left. And, I mean, that's a huge field. You know, to cash in that, it's not easy, man. He did really well.
40 out of 560 in those conditions? Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like he finished 47th.
No, I mean, that's
the proud vote.
I know, 47th is just terrible.
And, of course, any kind of event that has this many people, Chris, is going to bring out some characters, if you will. And I remember on the first day, I looked over and I saw this very dapper gentleman with a very loudly colored suit. matching leather shoes and a fedora with a feather in it. And I'm like, you know what? That guy wants to be seen. That's cool. That's great. You know, hey, if you got it, flaunt it, right? So, and then later on that night, I saw somebody looks exactly like him in a completely different suit, but the same idea. Loud colors, matching shoes, leather shoes, and a hat with a fedora. And I'm like, wow. There are two guys dressed like that here? Little did I know that you've been talking to this guy, and the next day I walk in and I see him dressed completely different. Turns out he changes his clothes every break, Chris.
He's got like three or four outfits he brings with him every time he plays, and he changes at the breaks. And so when he comes out again, you're like, wait a minute, weren't you just wearing green and yellow plaid? Now you got red and black on. He's like, hey, man, my name's Money Mike, and I'm Money. I change every time I get a chance. I'm like, what? A good poker player changes gears, I change clothes. You know, I'm like, oh, my God. It was classic, man. He was a funny guy. He cashed, too. He made the final 42.
Yeah, he
good
was
player.
Money Mike. Money Mike.
But I got to tell you, you know, he was a character, but nothing beats the character I met in the men's room. First thing, okay, you know, the stalls are always full because
we're really
going
to talk about the guys that you're meeting in the restaurant.
We have to for this.
I thought that was off limits, but by judge's order.
So, you know, you go in there and all, as a guy, the urinals, you know, are always all taken up. So some guys go into the stalls and use the stalls instead. So, and it's funny that there's a big sticker behind the flushing handle, and it says, flush up for number one, flush down for number two. And I'm like, what? I never heard of that in my life. You flush up this conserve water for this, and you flush down if it needs more thrust to get whatever's in there down, it said. Yeah. I was like, oh, my God. So I'm in there, and I'm using the
yellow,
the
let
him know,
buddy. It's brown, flush it down.
So I'm in there using the facilities, and, of course, I'm flushing up, okay, so to give you an idea of what I'm doing in there. I turn around.
So you had the ace.
I was my stream of justice. So I turn around, and literally it was like I was in a boxing match, and the referee is giving us all the rules of the match. There's a guy standing right there. His nose, I thought it was George Michael in the loo, you know? I'm like, he was like, you know, he's not going to ask me to show him mine if I, you know, what's going on here? And sure enough, the guy's standing there waiting to use it. I'm like, couldn't he stand outside the stall when I came out? Don't come in the stall with me while I'm using the, I couldn't believe it. I turned around and he was like right there, his nose was like right there. I'm like, dude, did you get a good peek? What the hell? True story, man. True story.
And you know how I know it's true, Chris? Because I went to guyspeeing.com, and there's the video of you, man. So we're going to need to get the anti-up attorneys on that because you've been violated just like everyone.
I think I was violated. That guy had no right. It's not like I had the door closed or anything. So, I mean, maybe he like stumbled in, didn't realize I was in there, and then it was too late to turn around. It was awkward. I don't know. But
that would be even more awkward. Just turn around, some guy's running out of the
basketball. Oh, man. But that was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me, man. I can't believe it.
Well, as much fun as we had in Daytona, we couldn't stay there forever. So we went back to the hotel. I froze a little bit during the night, woke up early, and out there made a campfire to warm up. And then we hit the road, went down to Cape Canaveral. Unfortunately,
blistering
2 days
rainstorm.
After the space shuttle.
A blistering rainstorm, too.
Yes,
oh,
it was
man.
Nasty.
Couldn't even see.
Nasty. I was quite happy I was a passenger that day. And we checked out the Monarch of the Seas, one of the great ships in the Royal Caribbean line, because, you know, we're looking to get Trey set up here, and the Poker Cruise 3. And, you know, we've been to Tampa the first two times. Kind of want to move around the state, try to get a different market that we haven't tapped.
Yeah, different locale.
Yeah, and not going to Cozumel all the time. You know, Chris needs to wreck a scooter in a different country this time. So, you know, if this Monarch of the Seas ship works out, and we think it might, you know, we'll be looking to probably do Trey, Andy at Poker Cruise 3, maybe in October, and a little four-day event. Hit the Bahamas this time rather than Mexico, and have the same great poker experience we've had in the last two.
We'll see. We'll see if it works out. And, you know, I'd much rather go there right now and just have a nice little four-day cruise. And I like the Bahamas. And I saw the private islands there, too, once when I was on the Disney cruise. And it's really, really serene and pretty cool and relaxing. So something that you and I will be overdue for come October. So
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully it'll happen.
And one of the best things about this, too, is I think the cost is going to be much less than the previous cruises we've done. So I don't want to tease too many people too much, but it should be fairly affordable. So, you know, keep that October schedule open.
This is Joe Navarro, and you're listening to the best poker cast in all the universe, Ante Up, the absolute best on poker.
All right, well, I teased at the top of the show, Chris. We've got a quintessential Raz training hand.
Am I supposed to say something? I don't know.
You could say something. Generally, you know, when I say something, you say something back. That's how this works.
Otherwise, it'd be a monologue.
Yeah, I mean, in other words, I don't even know why you're here. I mean, I could just, you know, Rush Limbaugh it if you want.
Usually when I agree with you, I don't have to say anything. You just keep talking.
Okay, all right. So that's the secret decoder ring now, all right? So if I don't hear anything from you, then
you assume I agree, that's all.
Right. I'm going to wait for you to hang up then, and I'm going to do all kinds of stuff, man. All right, you are. It's a great Raz hand, and I also wanted to mention that it sounds like our good buddy Lee Childs will be back next week and probably for some the next couple weeks, bringing back his special brand of Know Them at Hold'em analysis. But of course, he knows nothing about Raz.
No, zero. Know. Zilch. Not
total specialist.
He admits it.
Yep. And, of course, we know very little about Brett Raz, too, because no one knows anything about Raz.
How could you?
It is just a brutal game, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be beautiful at sometimes, but for the most part, it's just brutal.
It's usually brutal through the 4th Street, and then it's brutal this 6th and 7th. That's usually how it works out. But Chuck Sidolacco sent in this Raz hand, Chris, and again, he's from Dayton, Ohio. Go Buckeyes! Thanks, Chuck. And here's what we have here. It is on PokerStars, 50 cents, $1. Of course, eight people at the table. Chip stacks for what they're worth range from $6.95 all the way up to $28.70. All right.
Yep.
All right. Third Street. We are looking around the table, and we see seven of diamonds.
No.
Seven.
Thank you.
Seven.
We don't want Faso to write in.
Seven. All right. We look around the table. We see a seven, a six, a jack, a seven, a tray, and a 10, and we have 5-ace-6.
Very good.
All right, that's a pretty good starting hand.
Yeah, a lot of people could be going in this hand with us, so might want to see where it goes. But, you know, we got one of our cards out, so that's good. Probably not going to pair that 6. Of course, the 3 and the 2 7s are out, so that kind of hurts us. But I'm definitely playing this hand.
Yeah, I got to think I'm probably in the lead here. I mean, at worst, there's only one person that could have a better hand than us here.
Yeah.
So I want to play this fast because we got a lot of people, like you said, that probably have something in them that are going to be going along with this. So let's build this pot and so we can smash a table when we break on the last two streets. All right, it's brought in for 25. It's raised by one of the sevens. And then the tray raises again, and it gets to us.
Well, I like the tray's hand, what he's doing here. He's trying to make us call two bets cold, you know, and trying to get isolated. So he could have a real good hand, or he could have a marginal hand. It feels like we still have another seven behind us, I think. Is that right or no?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it feels like with the three raising, the seven might even raise again, or the other seven may raise again. So I've got the best hand probably here. I have no problems trying to force out at least another seven and raise yet again, try to get this thing capped and get people to try to call three bets cold, knowing that they're probably way behind. So with that raise, I'm telling everyone, I have 3 to a 6, and if you have a seven, you're going to have to hit perfect to beat me. So I think, at least that's how I feel. So I'm going to raise again.
Yep, you're saying, get out of my way.
Yep.
All right, and our hero here calls, and I think I agree with you here. I mean, we at this point, you got too many hands that are good. So we need to, at this point, drive out some of those ones that are weaker, that we know are weaker. Because, again, it's a drawing game.
Yep.
You know? Right now our hand is beautiful, but unlike Hold'em, where your hand starts out with pocket aces, it's not going to get worse.
Right.
And Raz, you know, you get four kings, and you're sunk.
Yep.
So let's get the money in now, play it fast. That's what I say.
I totally agree, and I disagree with the call.
Excellent. All right, well, hero calls, of course. We get the 10 out of the way, of course, and then it's raised again by the 7.
The first 7 or the second 7?
This would be the second 7.
The second 7. Okay, wow.
See, we kind of like that now.
Wow, there's ignorance is bliss there for that person. I mean, we made it 3 bets with a 6 showing. That's crazy. What do you think is going to happen by raising there?
Yeah, I mean, even if he has ace deuce at this point, I mean.
Yeah.
Ugh, wow.
Whatever. I'm happy he did it. I want to play with that guy all the time. Tell me his name.
All right. Moonwalker 8.
Moonwalker 8. Oh, okay. So Michael Jackson's playing from beyond the grave.
All right. So he raises. The 6 calls the 3 best cold.
Huh.
A little scary. The jack, of course, gets out of the way. The initial raiser calls. And then the tray caps the pot.
Yeah, well, I'm not going anywhere. I want to see 4th Street, definitely. But the 6 could have a better hand than us, and the 3 could have a better hand than us, but I can't go anywhere. I want to at least see 4th Street and see what happens. So
this is great. We got with that kind of hand, I wanted a cap pot. I probably didn't want this many people in it.
Right.
But I'm happy with the cap. So, of course, our hero does call. The rest of the players call, and we go over to 4th Street. The 7 picks up the deuce. The 6 picks up a 5. The other 7 picks up a 4. Trey gets an 8, and we get a 7.
Okay, well, that's actually pretty good. I mean, I realize that deuce, 7, and that 4-7 could be beating us now, but we've picked up the key card, the 7, because otherwise you're going to have to pick up, you know, a tray, a 4, and a deuce to make it even better, but that 7's a key card there. Obviously, we could be pipped in the end, but now we know we're not going to pair our 7. We're probably not going to pair our 6. I'm happy that. I know they all hit low, but I know we're beating at least one, probably 2 players, but at least 1 player we're beating, so that's pretty good. I'm not going anywhere.
All right, well, the action starts with the 6-5, and that person checks.
That paired him. Why would he check? So it paired him.
Yep. 7-4 bets out. And the Trey 8, who capped it preflop or on 3rd Street, just calls now, Chris.
Yeah, well,
he's happy with this 8.
He knows he's behind.
And it gets to us.
I'm happy with just calling. It's probably going to get raised behind us, but I'm not going to force anybody out with a raise here, so I might as well try to control the pot and keep it as cheap as possible until we get to 5th when the betting doubles, so I don't have a problem just calling here.
Well, that's a very good point, too, because, you know, you're right. You know, if you don't drive anybody out, I mean, the two reasons to raise are build a pot if you're going to win or to get people out. And at this point, you know, we're kind of in the middle of both.
Yeah.
And obviously that one player checks, so they're going out anyhow. We're not going to get the raiser out, so. All right.
Yeah. So you agree, right? Just call?
Yeah, I think, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to a raise, but I think a call is perfectly fine, probably what I would do.
Yeah, because I don't think a raise is going to get anybody out, and that's, you know, it defeats the purpose. So let's control the pot, and when we get to 5th Street, when we know the bet doubles and we got to get some real money into this hand, we can see where we are at that point.
I mean, the argument for raising is we got 4 low cards now, so, I mean, it's a little less likely that we're going to brick all the way out now.
Right.
But, you know, calling's fine, and that's what our hero does. Moonwalker, who's got the 7 deuce, raises, and then the 5-6, who checked, calls the dollar, Chris.
That's weird. It feels like they paired that 5 to me.
You know, with 6-5 showing, they got the best board showing right now, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, next to us. And
well, no, they had the best board showing.
No, they do, actually.
Six, seven,
they do, yeah, because we got 6-7 showing. Yeah. So I really don't know why you would check there and then call. I mean, slow playing in Raz with this many people, it just seems weird.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, I can't figure that out at all. It feels like he paired his 5 to me, and it's a pot's too big, and he wants to see 5th Street. That's what it feels like, but I have no idea.
All right, well, we get 2 more callers, and it gets to us.
I just call.
Yep. And that's exactly what he did. Now, what our hero does say, he noticed that he screwed up here, though, that one of the players was nearly all in. And he said he should have realized that this player is getting his money in the pot either sooner or later, and that we probably should have made it sooner with the hope of winning a nice side pot.
Whatever.
Minor problem.
Yeah.
All right, fifth street. 7-deuce gets a queen.
Nice.
6-5 gets a king.
Nice.
7-4 gets a queen.
Nice.
3-8 gets a 10.
Nice.
We get four.
Oh my god! You couldn't have handpicked the cards yourself.
I mean, if you were you were bidding on the cards where you got to control what people were going to get, I'm not sure you could have picked a better set of cards to come.
Oh, man, that's sweet.
Four high bricks, and we make our hand.
And we can only improve from here. And the thing about it, too, is, you know, you're probably not going to lose some people here, but you know you've got a made hand, and they're going to have to catch to beat you on two cards with a nice-sized pot out of there already.
Yes.
That is sweet. And now we clearly have the best hand showing, so we're first to act, right?
Yep, we're first to act.
I'm definitely betting.
Yeah, got the foot on the throat here. Going all Jack Bauer on these guys, man.
Got one foot on the throat, one foot on the throttle, baby. We're pedal to the metal.
All right, so our hero does bet, but he does wonder whether he should dare slow play it and hope they bet into me.
Not a chance.
No, because I would hope that no one in this hand is stupid enough to do that, because they would have to think that they would sniff out what you're doing and know that you're going to raise them. I think anybody in this hand would love to get a free card for the next one, right?
Yeah, not a chance. I mean, you know, you never know about some idiot who might think that you paired your four and now they're betting out to make you fold, which you never would at this point given their cards. So you've got to get your money in when you know you're good here, because you can't give, say, the 6-5 a free card, or even the 7-4 who could be drawn to a better 7 than you. So, and I love the 4 because not only does it make our hand, but, you know, it's less likely someone else is going to get a 4 to make their hand because there's already a 4 out. Right. A lot of our cards are duplicated, so they're not going to get our card. So it's a great card for us. We're betting and loving it. And if we could shove all in, we would.
That'd be great. No limit Raz.
Yeah, on 5th Street, Raz turns to no limit.
All right, well, hero does bet out. Moonwalker, again, he said the 7, deuce, queen, raises, Chris.
Wow. Well,
see,
I think
this is why you would never entertain slow playing here, because there's always going to be somebody in this hand that's going to raise you with an inferior hand.
Well, you know why he's raising, right? I mean, he's clearly drawing to a better 7 than we have, and he's hoping to get these other, high cards out. Yeah,
absolutely.
So yep. I can see the play there, but it's probably
got to know that's going to cost him an extra buck at least.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to repop him when he comes back to us. So
yep.
This is one of those borderline kind of moves.
A lot of these stacks weren't very big either, so I can't remember what he had for a stack. He might be short stacked at this point and just wanting to get it all in on a good hand.
Yeah, he's got 3 bets left here when he raises it.
Yeah, so there you go.
Or 4 bets.
4. Okay, so I don't necessarily disagree with him. He's probably thinking on another level, and rightfully so, to get these other guys out, try to isolate you and then catch one of his miracle, whatever it would be, a 3 or a 5 or something, to make a better 7 than we have. But, man, we're happy about that. And if somebody calls now, oh, my God, it's going to be even better.
Yep. All right, well, the 6-5 king gets out of the way. But Mr. Pickles, 7-4 queen, calls.
Oh, man, what an overcall that is. So
see, this is the Hail Mary play of Raz here. This is you looking around, I've got 4 good low cars. There's a lot of money in the pot. I'm going to the wall. When really you should remember there's a limit, and saving bets is just as good as winning bets, and wow.
Mr. Pickles, say goodbye to that money.
All right, so he calls. We get rid of the 3-8-10, and it gets back to us.
And
of course, we can't click the raise button quick enough here. Our hero does that. And then Moonwalker puts his last 90 cents in, re-raising it again. Petting, of course, his cap now. Mr. Man. Pickles, don't go now.
Oh, man.
And he does it. He calls.
Well, see, that's the thing. You could tell Moonwalker wanted to get his money in with a good draw, thinking he has 2 cards left to make a better 7. That's clearly why he's getting in this. And I don't know, what is Mr. Pickles? Mr. Pickles is all in now, too, or no? No.
No.
No, okay.
And remember, he's got got 7-4 queen. So,
okay.
All right, of course, we call at that point because the betting is capped, although I would probably call a floor over and ask whether special dispensation in this hand because everybody's playing it so badly that we allow one more raise. You know, hey, all they can say is no, Chris.
Yeah, right.
You don't know if you don't ask. All right, 6th Street. Moonwalker with the 7-deuce queen gets the ace. Mr. Pickles with the 7-4 queen gets a 4.
Oh, that's good.
And we get a deuce.
Wow, now we got a 6.
5, ace, 6, 7, 4, deuce. Keeps getting better.
Oh, man. That's great. Because at first I was afraid of that ace. You know, you could have made a better 7 than us there. But now it doesn't matter. We got a 6. He can't have beaten us. So, sweet, man.
Our hero says he's got the lone remaining live player mathematically beat. Considers a check in hopes of coaxing him to take a stab so I can re-raise.
No way.
All right, but he finally decides that's not a good plan. Bets. Gets called!
Oh, man. There's so much money out there, he's probably thinking, I could still hit my 7. You know, you may not have a 6, so...
Wow. I mean, with this much action, I mean, I don't know. 6th Street, you're getting so far down. And the thing is, you're going to have to call 2 bets here.
Yeah.
You call a bet now, there's going to be a bet on the river.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're praying that you hit at that point. And if you hit, then you don't even know if you're good at that point either.
Man.
I mean, I guess this is what separates the really good Raz players from the rest of us, is being able to lay something like this down at this point.
Right.
But Mr. Pickles decides to call.
Jeez.
River, we get the 8, so it doesn't improve us. But, boy, 7 low cards.
Yeah, 7 cards, all 8 or lower. It's not too easy to do.
Of course, we bet it out. Mr. Pickles finally surrenders. Didn't hit the miracle card he was looking for.
Man.
We show our 6 low, and Moonwalker shows a queen low.
Well, what if, so we had queen 7.
4, ace, 7, deuce, queen, ace, deuce.
Yeah, so the deuce, that's what he had the deuce in the hole, and he was hoping to hit a 3 or a 5 to beat us, but it didn't matter because we hit a 6. Yeah, you could tell he was short-stacked, wanting to get it all in and when he had a chance and try to shove everybody else out in case we bricked up and his hand would hold. But, well, that's a good lesson there, especially on 5th Street, man. Never give him a free card on 5th, especially not on 6th.
Absolutely.
So yeah, nice hand. And so now, did he say Chuck say that he doesn't play a lot of Raz and this is kind of his learning curve?
That is a good question. No, does not say anything like that.
Okay, because you know it's a good level to play at. 50 cents a dollar is a good level to play at, where it doesn't sting your online bankroll too much while you're learning. And clearly, you know, don't slow play hands in Raz unless you have the absolute nuts in their board locked, you know, and then you think they're aggressive, they're going to bet into you. Didn't seem like these guys were that aggressive, even though they did cap it with a 3-8. But nice hand, nice way to take it down, and you know, pretty routine really for a Raz hand there, as far as how to play it once you got deep enough into the hand.
Good fundamentals, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And wow, what an amazing number of low cards out in one hand.
And he didn't even pair them either. That's the other thing too. That's not easy to do, man.
But even if you factor all the other low cards everybody else had, I mean, there probably wasn't a low card left in the deck. I'm surprised we only got a couple breaks out of that. Amazing. All right, Chuck, well, we appreciate you sending in the hand, and even though you aren't swag eligible, I don't care, because this is a great product that I think you're going to benefit from. We are going to send you a free download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games. That comes from element26.net. Go to that website, use code AU15, and you will save some cash.
All right, well, I want to thank them putting on a wonderful tournament at the Venetian Charity Classic for us to have lots of stuff to talk about. I also want to thank Tom McAvoy for sitting on your left and being felted so that you can feel like a hero on the show again. And I want to thank you for rubbing it in that you won a TV, and I got nothing for playing for 10 and a half hours. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
I am Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We will see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.